The Jones budget is under attack from the liberal Democrats in the House on the left and from the conservative Democrats in the House on the right. Can it survive?
Well, I think it can because it has to. We have to get a hold of this spending. We have to restrain it in the future, and to do that, you've got to keep the budget process intact. That clearly is the biggest challenge as to whether or not the budget process itself will remain, but I believe it can because I believe among liberals and conservatives alike, the election of 1980 was read the same way. And what the American people were saying is that we've got to reduce spending, we've got to get a hold of runaway government, and we have to do it in a fair and equitable way. And for that reason, I think the budget process and the budget itself will survive.
From CBS News, Washington, Face the Nation on the CBS Radio Network. A spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview with Representative James Jones of Oklahoma, chairman of the House Budget Committee. Representative Jones will be questioned by CBS News correspondent Bruce Morton, by Thomas Edsel, a correspondent for the Baltimore Sun, and by the moderator, CBS News correspondent George Herman.
James Robert Jones was born in Muskogee, Oklahoma on the 5th of May, 1939, and is approaching his 42nd birthday. His father was a rural letter carrier, his mother a telephone operator. In high school, Jones was elected governor of Boys State. At the University of Oklahoma, he worked nights on a newspaper and set up a small radio station network to help pay his college bills. Jones came to Washington in 1961 to work for a congressman by day and to attend Georgetown Law School by night. He was brought in to help Vice President Lyndon Johnson, worked on Johnson's 1964 campaign, and was soon made Deputy Chief of Staff of the White House. And in the last months of the Johnson presidency, he was Chief of Staff. When President Nixon took office, Jones went back to Oklahoma and started running for Congress. He lost in 1970 and won in 1972 and ever after. Jones is a small, slender man with rimless eyeglasses and, according to his wife, a secret ambition to be a tap dancer. Mostly these days, he does jogging instead.
We continue now with Face the Nation.
Mr. Jones, you responded to my first question, but I'm not exactly sure you answered. The problem that I'm trying to bring up is that the Democrats have a fairly thin majority in the House. You have a conservative Democratic coalition, which is talking about and has been in conversation with joining the Republicans. And you have the liberals, for example. You may have seen the ad in the paper today. Liberals want to march on Washington to cut down the Reagan budget cuts for the Pentagon and to give more money back to social programs. If the liberals refrain from voting, and if the conservatives vote with the Republicans, isn't your budget dead?
Well, I would say that if the conservatives and the liberals and the Democrats and the Republicans all insist on their own positions, then there is no way that any budget resolution can pass. And if all of the budget resolutions go down, I think the American people will have been done a disservice, because the process itself is what really is important. And if you dismantle the budget process because for either partisan reasons or for pure philosophical reasons, there is no give, no willingness to compromise, then I think our chances of restraining spending on a long-term basis are significantly undermined.
How much is your sponsorship of a Democratic alternative budget hurting you in your own district?
Well, it's hard to tell. We have had a lot of phone calls and a lot of mail, a lot of telegrams, and it's been a mixed review so far. A lot of misinformation has been distributed.
By whom?
Well, there obviously partisanship gets into this back home. But, for example, there is the indication that we're cutting defense spending in the budget that was passed by the Budget Committee, and this simply is not true. We're actually increasing defense spending $900 million more than the president recommended as late as April 7th in the letter I received from the Department of Defense. There's other misinformation that pertains to the tax bill itself. And I believe that as we continue the debate on the budget and point out what the real facts are in this budget and what the issues are, the size of the deficit versus the size of the tax cuts, then I have had good support from my district, and I think the American people have spoken on what they want in a budget.
Mr. Jones, you said a minute ago that if everybody stuck to his position on this, there wouldn't be any kind of a budget. But it seems to me that if the Republicans stick to their position and win over 35 or 40 conservative Democrats, there'll be a Reagan-style budget. How good are the chances of that?
Well, I think you have to, first of all, recognize that the committee's budget endorses three-quarters of President Reagan's spending cuts as it exists. Secondly, our difference is on the tax bill, and that's going to be a difference that will be taken to the House floor. But I have already received communications from different people in the administration who indicate that the administration wants to work together to try to reach some compromises to get this budget through the Congress. We've noticed already some signals from the White House indicating that there will be some compromises to get the bill through the Senate Budget Committee.
You've talked to people in the administration. Where are they willing to compromise? Are they willing to give up on the three-year Kemp-Ross income tax cut?
Well, I don't have any official statements from anyone in the administration, but I have met with spokesmen from the administration that indicate they are willing to compromise on both the spending cut side and the tax cut side. There is a growing feeling that if you have the three-year 30% cut in taxes, that you're leaving yourself wide open to a very large deficit the third year out. And so I believe that the administration, in the indications that I've received unofficially, will be willing to work with the Congress on the tax bill and will be willing to compromise.
To do what, a one-year bill?
Well, I think they're going to want some assurances on a multi-year bill, and what I would propose is that we state policy clearly in Congress that we want to have a multi-year tax bill. But before we do it, we ought to come to grips with the spending side, and we ought to force Congress and the administration to cut spending before we have large tax cuts. And I believe within those parameters, we can work out some sort of an agreement to move both the spending cut program and the tax cut program through the Congress.
Would that statement of policy be in any way binding? You say you would propose us that we state it as our policy to have a multi-year tax cut.
At the present time, there is no way that I'm aware of that you can bind both the tax cut and the spending cut and link them together in law. However, the binding aspect would be the political pressure that it would place on both the administration and the Congress not to move ahead in one direction until you've solved, say, the spending cut side.
What happens if the economy takes a downturn, as some economists seem to think it's going to happen? What happens to the size of the deficit? What happens to the whole budget process?
Well, I think that's why it's important that we take as much of the risk out of the program as possible, and why we try to take it one step at a time rather than having a three-year automatic tax cut without leaving any room for adjustment due to conditions that might occur in the economy. If the economy turns down, then I think clearly we have to have some policies that will prevent large-scale unemployment, because that would be very counterproductive to the economic recovery program. So I think, personally, I think that if we take as much of the risk out of the administration's and Congress's economic goals, then I think the program can work, actually. I believe we can begin to be on a road toward real economic growth.
Are you talking about putting job programs back in the program?
Well, no. As you know, in the budget that passed the House committee, the public service job component was deleted. That recommendation of President Reagan was endorsed by the House committee. We have put money back for job training, however, because we feel very strongly that those people who will be out of work by losing their public service employment ought to have an opportunity to gain the skills and the technology necessary to get into the private sector employment. So we're not talking about public service jobs at this point, but there are a lot of programs. If the economy turns down, a across-the-board personal tax cut may be counterproductive. Maybe what you need is a directed, targeted tax program to produce jobs.
You said with a perfectly straight face a few moments ago that a lot of misinformation had been spread in your district, in your region, a lot of misinformation about cutting the defense budget. Didn't that misinformation, in fact, Mr. Chairman, come from you? Didn't you say in the beginning that you were cutting the defense budget as you re-estimated it?
Well, as I hoped it, I didn't intentionally give out any misinformation if that's what occurred. Basically, though, we felt that the administration would spend more than they said they would in previously authorized procurement contracts.
And you said that you were cutting from that.
And what we said was, if they're going to spend as much as $5 billion more than they thought they would, it seems to me that there ought to be some areas in the Pentagon that are not essential to our military capability that ought to be reduced. Among those areas that we suggested they look at are the addition of 30,000 civilian bureaucrats that the administration proposes to add to the Pentagon. If they need those civilian bureaucrats, that's fine. But it seems to me that in an effort to try to hold down the size of government, they at least ought to put a lid on total number of the bureaucracy and draw those 30,000 civilian civil servants from other agencies, or at least hold down the other agencies. Also, we suggested on the pay raise that's scheduled for July, rather than an across-the-board cut, across-the-board pay increase, it seems that we ought to target that pay increase to those areas of the military that have retention problems at the present time.
But don't all these details add up to the fact that you did say at one time in the committee that you would be cutting the Reagan defense budget?
Well, I have said at one point...
As you re-estimated it.
Yes, and I still believe that we ought to cut the fat out of Pentagon spending. But the fact remains that the budget that was passed by the House Committee is $900 million more than the administration asked for next year.
Do you think this kind of defense spending is likely to contribute to inflation?
Well, if we...
It's part of your contention that
if we
need
find
to cut federal spending to reduce the deficit, and...
I think that as we look ahead to the decade of the 1980s, we're going to have to do three things in defense. First of all, we're going to have to try to achieve an equitable arms limitation agreement with the Soviets, because if we get into an unlimited arms race, we simply cannot channel enough resources into the private sector to get the economy moving. Secondly, we must get our allies to carry a greater share of the defense burden. We're doubling our commitment to NATO this year. We're going to spend over 6% real increase in defense next year, and most of our allies are spending less than their commitment to NATO. And the third thing we have to do is to make some basic policy judgments as to what kind of military we're going to have, both in a personnel matter, whether we're going to continue the volunteer army or go to some form of draft, and in weapon systems, whether we're going to have a few of the high-priced weapon systems or a lot of the lesser-priced weapon systems.
Which way would you want to go in that?
Let me take you into another area that your committees are going to have to worry about in the 80s, and that's Social Security. One Ways and Means Subcommittee has come out in favor of raising the age. The Senate has voted a couple of different ways on whether to change how benefits are indexed. What do you think ought to be done, given that the system is going broke?
I think we're going to have a national dialogue on what we want the Social Security system to be. At the present time, it is a multiple program of retirement benefits, survivors benefits, health benefits, education benefits, and disability benefits. I called a couple of insurance agents from my home state in Oklahoma and described an insurance policy to them that I'd like for them to sell to me. I didn't call it Social Security, but I said, these are the elements that I'd like to have, which are the elements of the Social Security program. So what would you sell it to me for to get the highest benefits? And I believe the premium was, the lowest premium they would sell it to me for was over $700 a month. And you compare that to the premium or the taxes paid on Social Security for the same kind of program, it's a little over $200 a month. All that tells me is that we cannot have benefits outrun the cost of the program indefinitely. And so what I think we need to do is examine the program closely, decide what we want it to do. My personal judgment is that we ought to highlight it as basically a supplemental retirement program and a disability insurance program rather than all the others. And in doing so, I think that will help save the long-term financial strength and viability of the program.
Get out of the Medicare business.
Well, I think that as we start trying to bring some cost consciousness into the healthcare industry, We're going to have to look at Medicare and all health benefits in terms of a different way of funding them as opposed to the Social Security Trust Fund. I believe that's where we're headed.
Mr. Chairman, is the Reagan program, the Republican program, so popular with Americans that 2 years from now we may see you as the ranking minority member of the House Budget Committee?
I don't know that you can determine what's going to happen. I personally believe that the Democrats are going to respond to the American voters' wishes in 1981, 1980, and 1982. And I obviously hope that we're not going to be in a minority position, and I don't expect us to be. I think right now what the American people would like to see most is both parties put aside some of their partisanship and to try to work together in what is perceived to be what's good for the country. And that has been my goal in the Budget Committee from the start, and I know there are a number of Republicans who share that goal.
Has your strategy really been working, though? In the South and in the West, that's where the Republicans have been making their gains. It's also where members like yourself, who are fiscal conservatives, come from. You've been slowly getting eroded away, not yourself, but other colleagues. Is this something where it's just a holding pattern that, in the long run?
Well, Mr. Edsel, as you know, about 5 years ago, a number of us tried to start turning around tax policy with a view toward this issue of capital formation, with a view toward giving more tax relief for the broad category of middle-income workers, and with a view of trying to simplify the tax code. That perhaps was the start of a change in direction in the Democratic Party to respond to some of the interests expressed by the voters in 1980. I believe the Democrats have been most responsive so far in trying to build a budget that is responsible and responsive to the American people, and in putting together a tax program that does the same thing, and I think we'll continue to do so.
Even with this, though, I understand you're going to be targeted by the National Conservative Political Action Committee for 1982.
Well, someone indicated that they had some sort of a target list or hit list of some sort, and that I was on that list, and that is fine if to the extent that those things happen in a political atmosphere. I think it's unfortunate that you have to carry on politics year in, year out, but it's an outside group, and we have had experience with outside groups coming into Oklahoma in the past. Oklahomans are pretty independent people. They take their information and weigh it very carefully, and they don't buy kinds of campaigns from outside groups that doesn't have substance to it.
Congressman, you were an aide in the Johnson White House during the Great Society, when a lot of these social programs that are now either shrinking or disappearing came in. And I wonder, was that a mistake then, or have the times simply changed, or how do you feel as you see some of these go down in flames now?
Well, let me make a couple of observations. First of all, I think the goals that were behind those programs were very laudable, to try to make all parts of this country participants in the economic wealth of this country. And I think as a result of that, you found our middle class has actually improved considerably over the past 15 years, more people into the middle income areas. There is more personal wealth than there was before that. I think the main problem we had in those days was that there were so many ideas being put on the law books so rapidly, and that the administrative apparatus never could catch up with it. And then in the decade of the 1970s, it became just a self-perpetuating sort of program, and a lot of people lost sight of the fact of what they were there for. They were there to try to help people instead of trying to build bureaucracy or build bigger government. And so I think it's time now to take a look at it, to look at those programs that should be continued or retained in some fashion. And I think that's all proper, and I applaud the administration for taking a hard look at it.
In the Jones budget, if I may call it that, that you crafted in your committee, you put back some funds, not very large funds, but some funds for child nutrition, food stamps, fuel assistance to the poor, legal services for the poor, job training, education. Did you put back enough money, in your opinion, to really keep those programs going, or just to keep them sort of in suspended animation until some other period comes along?
Well, basically, what we tried to do, we were guided by a number of principles. One was to have fairness in the system, so that where sacrifice was called, we tried to spread the sacrifice out as fairly as possible. Secondly, we were guided by this whole issue of productivity. Productivity means investment, both in the capital resources of this country and investment in the human resources. And we looked at the budget and felt that some of those investments in human resources were being cut too deeply. For example, basic education, nutrition programs. We have a lot of studies that show that early childhood nutrition actually brings about a more productive adult citizen and less juvenile delinquency and crime in future years than was the case when you didn't have proper nutrition. In the area of job training, one of the most frustrating things of all is for a young person not to have the skills to become a productive member of the society. And of the economy.
You can't talk about productivity, I take it, without talking about cutting some taxes that stop increased investment.
That's correct. And so our budget that passed out of the budget committee reestablishes some of the funds for job training, for education, for nutrition, for health. And it also retargets the tax proposals so that you get tax relief in relation to the investment and savings that American individuals and business put into this economy.
Can you take us behind the scenes for just a moment? Is there a Jones budget program, a Dan Rostenkowski, chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, tax program, and all these things are coming from out of nowhere, from different, or is there a Democratic leadership behind it all, tying all this together?
Well, I would say that the Democratic leaders in Congress have been consulting with each other. There is no plan to have one overall program that would replace the administration's program in total. Personally, I think the administration has laid the groundwork very well to allow us to do some of the things that this country has been needing to have done. But with regard to the budget, as I say, what we have done, and I think what Chairman Rostenkowski has done in the Ways and Means Committee, is to try to fulfill our constitutional responsibilities of looking at the administration's program and trying to improve upon it. Most of what they're suggesting are being accepted and endorsed by the Congress and the Democrats in Congress. In no way are we trying to obstruct the thing. We're trying to improve on it, and I think we'll continue to.
You've moved up the ladder, up to the Budget Committee in just 8 years. You're high on the Ways and Means Committee. If Speaker O'Neill retires, do you have thoughts about running for leadership in the full House?
I tell you, all I have thoughts of right now is the next step in the budget process. As you know, it's very hard to get enough votes to pass a budget resolution, and most of my time is going to be dedicated to that. And where that leads, I'm really not sure. The interesting thing about the past history of budget chairmen, Brock Adams and Bob Gimo, is that they look forward to retirement after they've gone through the process of trying to put budgets together.
One became a cabinet secretary. Yeah.
That's true.
Are we likely to go through a kind of waltz that we've seen in the past where the House, the full House, first rejects the budget committee, then there's some token adjustment, and then finally it gets passed?
I hope not. I think the American people want Congress, members of both parties, to put together a sound budget resolution that is fair to all and that does restrict and restrain federal spending. And I expect them to, the American people expect us to not play games with this budget. And I would hope that over the next 2 weeks, the Democrats and Republicans alike will meet with their constituents, will come back, and will decide what we need to do is to get this budget act passed and go on to conference and get the program underway.
Thank you very much, Chairman, for being with us today on Face the Nation.
Thank you.